Hello and welcome to the Lincoln County Gardener, a weekly segment broadcast on KYAQ Newport, where the Lincoln County Master Gardeners bring you weekly conversations on a variety of gardening topics. Master Gardeners are local community members trained in scientifically based gardening techniques by Oregon State University Extension Service, so we'll be sharing research-based and locally relevant information. My name is Ross. I'm a Lincoln County Master Gardener, and I'll be your host this week. This week's theme is pollinator gardening. With me today is Master Gardener and South Beach Demonstration Garden co-coordinator Joan Krall. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Ross. How are you today?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Good to hear. So most people know what a pollinator is, and we know what a garden is, but what is pollinator gardening? I know that at least it's not farming insects, right?
Right. So basically, it's that the garden space will support the entire life cycle of bees, butterflies, and other pollinators, and be free from insecticides. It will promote diversity of pollinator types as well.
So that makes a lot of sense. What makes a garden a pollinator garden?
The gardens that are planted with a variety of flowers that provide nectar and pollen to feed bees and other insects. Plants are selected to have a continuous bloom period that extends from late winter, i.e. flowering currant, through early fall, like asters and goldenrod. These gardens also supply places for the pollinators to build their nests, raise their young, and overwinter. Many native plants are excellent choices as they attract a wide variety of pollinators.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned a couple specific bugs earlier on, but what determines whether an insect is considered a pollinator versus not?
Well, we consider bees, butterflies, and moths flies, mm-hmm. beetles, hummingbirds, and bats. So anything
bats.
That goes to a flower mm-hmm. Or brushes up against a flower or crawls through a flower can be a pollinator.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That makes sense. What is your experience with pollinator gardening?
As co-coordinator of the South Beach Garden, I help foster and maintain three pollinator beds, mm-hmm. an early spring bed, a summer bed, and a late summer to fall bed. These beds are filled with natives, pollinator-friendly bulbs, and some non-native perennials and annuals. We do not use any insecticides, and we provide habitats such as nesting materials, nesting sites, as well as water.
What initially got you interested in pollinator gardening?
Well, I know how important pollinators are to mm-hmm. our food chain, mm-hmm. and without pollinators, we can't feed people, right?
That's
so,
pretty important.
And I also love I love flowers, mm-hmm. so it was a perfect combination to have a wide variety of flowers so that I could attract pollinators to my garden.
I'm on board. How do you start a pollinator garden?
So as with any garden project, planning is key. Things to be considered are location, which is plenty of sunshine, okay? Mm-hmm. Seeking a diversity of flower shapes and plant families. Select plants to ensure continuous flowering from late winter to fall. And we recommend including 50 to 60% of native plants, trees, and shrubs. Also, planting single-flowered varieties produce more pollen and nectar. Mm-hmm. You want to plant fewer types of flowers in larger blocks of each type. Mm-hmm. And this is especially important if you have a limited space. So the bees don't have to fly so far around, you know, to go to two flowers here and four flowers there. Mm-hmm. They can go mm-hmm. to like 20 flowers mm-hmm. and get a good food source.
You want to make it as easy as possible.
Yes. The other thing you want to do is create some nesting opportunities for the bees and the other pollinators. And I will cover that a little bit later today, I think. We want to reduce and eliminate insecticide use. Oregon State University has an excellent planning guide that has bloom times, flower color of natives and non-natives. There are even some sample gardens to help with design. The article is EM9289, and it's called Enhancing Urban and Suburban Landscapes to Protect Pollinators. This is available through OSU website, which is extension.oregonstate.edu/catalog. Lots of great information, including a section on insecticides.
Mm-hmm. That sounds really useful. You sort of alluded to size being a consideration for pollinator gardening. Is there a specific minimum size for a pollinator garden? How big does it need to be?
Well, first, I would say to start small, maybe 200 to 400 square feet. This allows you to see what works and what doesn't work before you tear up all of your lawn, right? In small spaces, it's important to plant fewer types of pollinator plants so that you can have a good sized amount of each plant planted in groups, as we had discussed. This makes much less work for the pollinators to get the food they need.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other insight into factors that listeners should consider when they are setting up their first pollinator garden?
Yes. Most pollinators prefer full sun or at least 6 hours of sun. So you want to site your garden with that in mind. There are some that do well in partial shade, though, such as tall Oregon grape, Indian plum, and common yarrow, as well as pot marigolds. Water needs are also important. With all of us trying to save water, okay, it's important to be aware of the needs of the plants you're selecting. So are you looking for low maintenance plants? All these should be considered while you plan. The good news, the article I mentioned earlier has lots of information available on this.
So we talked a little bit about habitat and reducing the use of pesticides, but besides planting flowers, what gardening practices best support pollinators?
Well, bees build nests to grow their young, right? So we want to provide, you know, the habitat. So 70% of Pacific Northwest native bees nest in the ground.
Really?
Okay. Yes. So leaving some bare soil in areas that are not usually disturbed is one place to start. Make some small little piles of rocks or little piles of logs or sticks to provide shelter for the insects to crawl into. Many bees, including the leaf cutter and the mason bees, nest in hollow, pithy stems. Okay? They lay their eggs in the stems. Some suggestions of stems to leave in your garden are raspberries, grapevine, sedums, and goldenrod. You only need to leave approximately 8 inches tall left on the stem so your garden can still look neat. You can trim them down to 8 inches tall. They also need a source of water in very shallow pans or indentations in flat rocks. Most important, reduce or preferably eliminate the use of pesticides and insecticides. Remember, you have to have caterpillars to have butterflies.
Because pesticides are sort of indiscriminate. They aren't just going to target harmful insects. They're going to get everything.
They'll get everything, yes. And so we always try to go the least invasive of all types of control. Soapy water, you know, works well. Just sometimes a good spray with a hose will, hard spray with a hose will take care of some of those insects as well.
You've mentioned a couple specific creatures so far, but are there any local pollinators that are in particular need of support?
So all of our native pollinators are under stress from loss of habitat, changing climate, and unfortunately, too much use of pesticides. By each of us doing what we can to supply food, habitat, and not using pesticides, we can really make a difference.
Definitely. Are there any good resources for identifying those pollinators in the garden? So once listeners have their garden set up, they can see what types of insects.
Yes, there are some really good ones. Okay. Several great apps. The top three are, one is called Picture Insect. The other one is Seek by iNaturalist.
I've used that one.
Have you?
It's great.
And then there's one which is OBS Identify. It's very accurate. It has probably the best accuracy of identifying insects so far.
Where can people see a pollinator garden in Lincoln County?
Well, at the demo garden at OCCC College in South Beach. We have three pollinator beds already set up, so they can come and enjoy our garden anytime the gate is open at the college. We are there on Wednesdays from 11 to 1. And so if they would like to come during that time, there'll be master gardeners there that can answer their questions as well.
So just based on observation, hybridized flowers aren't always as attractive to pollinators. Are hybrid varietals something to avoid when pollinator gardening?
It is a good idea. The best type of flowers are single kind of flat flowers.
Easily accessible
mm-hmm. to the bees and the hummingbirds and all of that. Tubular flowers are also good. Bees will crawl inside the tubular flowers. One thing to know when they make them, of course, we all want to buy those beautiful flowers with the ruffled flowers mm-hmm. are so beautiful, but all those extra petals make it difficult for them to get in and get at the nectar mm-hmm. and also to collect the pollen. So even though they look pretty, they're not the best choices for pollinator gardens. Mm-hmm. More open flowers, like the flower of a yarrow, are good. Any kind of simple, what we call a simple flower that's just up facing is a very good idea as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have to find new ways to make your garden beautiful than just going after novelty flowers.
Right. Well, and not only that, there's all kinds of native trees and shrubs mm-hmm. that can be used along in addition to flowers. So with most gardens, you want some backbone of some shrubs or maybe a small tree. The Acer maples are a great pollinator tree, and they don't get really large. They can be trimmed if you need to. And there's all kinds of natives mm-hmm. That are helpful for the pollinators. There's spirea, there's madrone, there's salal. And so it's a good idea to have a mixture. And really what you're trying to do, which we have talked about before, is to keep food available from January mm-hmm. until November, mm-hmm. which is we can do on the coast because of our mild climate.
You want both some ecological and aesthetic variety through using plants besides flowers.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And also, I'm not saying that I never buy a ruffled flower, because I do buy a ruffled flower, but I do try to make sure that I have a lot of other plants and flowers that are pollinator friendly. Mm-hmm. But by all means, if you're in love with that ruffled geranium mm-hmm. and you want that, put it in a pot in your deck.
Yeah, it's not yeah. binary whether your whole garden is or is not a pollinator
Correct.
Garden. It's
right.
a process.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Do what makes you and the bees happy.
Yes. That was really helpful. Do you have any last minute tips to share?
Just get started. You know, don't put it off. You know, uh-huh. pick a small, if you don't have a large patch, just pick a small patch and plant some goldenrod.
Yeah, just yeah. one container is better than nothing.
It is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Next, let's get into some seasonal gardening tips. The bounties of summer continue with squashes, beans, tomatoes, and peppers in full swing. Make sure to fertilize plants that are continuously harvested, paying special attention to making sure tomatoes have adequate calcium to prevent blossom end rot. Blossom end rot starts as dark, mushy spots towards the bottom of tomatoes, and sometimes even peppers and eggplants. It is caused by insufficient calcium availability, either because there isn't enough calcium in the soil, or because of inconsistent watering that prevents the plant from moving calcium from the roots up into the plant. Watering consistently and using low nitrogen fertilizers can help remedy this problem. That's it for our program this week, but tune in for future broadcasts on KYAQ Newport, where we air after the news hours at noon and 4. You can find out how to contact us with all your gardening questions on our website, orcoastmga.org, where we'll also be putting these episodes after they air if you need another listen. We'd also love to hear your subject suggestions for future episodes. This broadcast is created by the Lincoln County Master Gardener Association, who work in collaboration with the Oregon State University Extension Service. Until next time, happy gardening.